Hello and welcome to What the Faux Travel Podcast with Nick and Amy. This is Series 4, Episode 3, and it's all about the Galapagos Islands, sponsored by Metropolitan Touring.
Hey guys, thanks for joining us and welcome to this very special podcast. This is going to be perfect for people who are already interested in the Galapagos Islands and are keen to hear about it and want to learn more, but also for people like us who don't really know, or we didn't really know much about the Galapagos Islands. We'll be introducing this place to you guys, explaining what it's all about, and we're all going to learn a lot.
Yeah, so obviously we knew about the Galapagos, we'd heard of it before, mainly because of David Attenborough, the king. Well, he's the prince of Galapagos because Charles Darwin really is the king, isn't he?
Yeah, it's a good link between our country, like Britain, and the Galapagos Islands. Normally when we travel, our country has bad links with countries due to our violent history, but this is a very nice link between Britain and the Galapagos Islands.
Yeah, and if you don't know who David Attenborough is, he is a very famous presenter from the UK and he's super posh, got the most beautiful voiceover voice, and he went there when he was younger and it kind of set off his career. And he went back recently and he met one of the really famous giant tortoises called
Lonesome George,
which we will talk about at some point, I'm sure. So this episode is sponsored by Metropolitan Touring. Now, they're a massive tour company who are in Ecuador. They're obviously in the Galapagos because we went there with them. They're in Colombia and also Peru.
Yeah, thanks to these guys, you're listening to this right now. So thanks to these guys, this has all been possible.
Let's start with an update. So which country are we in, Nick?
We are currently in Colombia, although it feels like we could just be in any like Caribbean country at the moment.
And which city are we in?
Santa Marta.
Nice accent.
Thank you. And is it very hot and sweaty here?
Oh my God. I mean, I think we've said this before, because when we are traveling, we need to record as we travel. And we normally do that in our rooms if they're not too echoey. And that means it gets hot. And here it's like 30 degrees outside, but I think inside here it's like 40 degrees. It is boiling.
Yeah, and for the purpose of good sound quality, we can't have the fan or air conditioning on, so this is a very sticky, sweaty situation right now. But we've only just really arrived in Santa Marta. Colombia's been a real treat so far. Santa Marta on the Caribbean coast, it feels very different. But yeah, it's cool to now be in the Caribbean. South America is almost finished of our big trip,
which is exciting because we're about to start Central America, but it's also a bit sad because this leg of the trip is kind of ending and it's definitely been our favourite. Now, let's kick off with some shout-outs, Nick. And I think I've never been so excited to say that to you because we've got some good ones.
We have some cracking shout-outs for you guys.
And there should be two people listening to this right now. I think they're going to listen separately who should be especially excited to listen to this shout-outs. Right, kick it off, Nick.
Are we talking about you who's listening right now? Okay, so we'll start with the most important people, the people we love the most, our patrons, because we've had some more people come on and join the crew. Damien Dobson and Simon Oram. We say this to everyone, but thank you so much. You guys, you really, really keep us going. Thank you for joining the crew, and hopefully you're going to enjoy all the rewards you can now get as a What the Faux patron. So, time for the big one, Amy. We had a cracking email from a listener called Katie. I'm not going to reveal her second name yet because it'll give it away a bit. So Katie, she wrote to us and she said, thanks for the podcast and in particular, your Jordan episode. She said, I loved it so much.
Oh my God.
That I actually booked a trip there for me and my boyfriend, Jacob.
Oh my God, Jacob is one lucky man.
So this is actually the first time that Jacob is hearing about this. Katie thought it would be fun if we told you.
Oh my God, I'm excited.
So this is Katie King. So what she's done is she's booked this for Jacob's birthday and Christmas present. All right, Jacob, so this is all you're going to get, but this is amazing. So this is your birthday and Christmas present.
I've actually got tears in my eyes. I feel so happy for Jacob.
This is very cool. So Jacob, listen up. You're going to Jordan on the 14th of January, 2020. And Katie told us...
Can I tell some details?
Go on then.
I feel like you're Yeah, but taking all the glory.
It's my part of the show.
Yeah, oh, that's true, actually, yeah.
You can carry on. On my voice there. See, I'm so excited. We're both tearing up. And carry on. I've got the script
okay,
written
there. So that date was the 14th of January, 2020. And Katie has so many cool things planned for you, Jacob. Like I said, you are so lucky. So your birthday is just after the trip on the 31st of January, apparently. Yeah, so there you go, Jacob. We have revealed your birthday and Christmas present. How exciting.
So that's great. Thank you so much, Katie, for writing to us. We're really happy to be able to tell Jacob about this trip that you've got planned for him. Now, we also heard from, actually, Amy, you can do this one because you know this girl and I can't pronounce her first name.
I knew you was going to do this to me because I was just looking at the name and I was thinking, I actually don't know either. Sorry, Anna. So I went to university with Anna. We studied photography together and she's from Poland. But I don't want to say
let's go
it wrong.
For it. I'm not brave to make myself look stupid. Anna,
you're not brave to make.
I mean, I don't care about looking stupid. I don't know what I'm trying to say. Anna Sakradja. Anna Sakradja.
I think it's Sakradja.
Anna Sakradja. Anna, thank you for getting in touch. She got in touch over Instagram and she said, great podcast. And she particularly liked our Greece episode. Yeah, I think that was a good one. I'd agree. I like our Greece episode as well. Thanks, Anna. We also heard from The Adventures of Brian Scott. He got in touch on Instagram. He said the new episode, our chilly one, he said, was so good. Series 4 started with a bang. Thank you so much. He also said, by the way, you guys are famous because I found you without Carl Watson.
Yes.
Amy, it's finally happened. It's finally happened. But then he said, although I do love his videos as well. Of course, who doesn't? Oh, and it's pronounced capsaicin.
What was I calling them then?
Capsaicin, maybe?
Capsaicin. No, because I knew it's capsaicin.
Okay, we pronounced something wrong.
I don't know.
As usual. Anna, you can tell us how we pronounce your name wrong as well. But it's pronounced capsaicin. But also on that topic, it's so funny. We had another message from Brenna Burks. She also corrected us on our chili pepper pronunciation. We were talking about the Carolina Reaper.
Oh, yeah, this is what I got wrong.
But she said, it's Carolina, not Carolina. It's named after my state, South Carolina. I'd love to show you guys around if you're ever here. And she also said she loved the new chili episode and looks forward to the rest of series 4.
Ah, well, Brianna, we might be taking you up on that little offer
Let's
soon.
Let's go to South Carolina. We also heard from Estrella on Instagram. Did you know your name is Star in Spanish? Estrella said, I've just started listening to your podcast. It saves me from boredom at work. The first episode I listened to was Israel. And when it got to the part where you were both telling jokes, particularly the orphan joke, I snorted with laughter and the entire office asked if I was okay. Amy won that game 100%.
Thanks, girl.
Your inappropriate jokes, Amy, but they were very funny. We also had another great email, this time from Greg Logan. He said, I'm Greg from Edinburgh and I'm a massive fan of the podcast.
Aww.
I was wondering if you had any advice. I've just finished university and I'll be starting a graduate scheme soon. I know I have to be patient and wait my time to travel. So how did you guys manage to stay patient and focus on that goal when you were saving for your big trip? It is tempting. I have actually emailed him back. I've answered the question. But yeah, it is tempting to go on little trips. And we did the occasional little trip thanks to couch surfing, you know, ways to go away for cheap. But yeah, you just got to think when you're saving money, it'll all be worth it for that big trip.
Yeah, and just keep yourself inspired by watching and listening to different travel content. That's what we do. We're regularly on YouTube, getting inspired about different places. And that way you can learn so much more about your trip and plan as you're saving. So it's kind of makes the whole process exciting, really.
Good advice. He finished by saying, P.S. Have a faux party in Scotland soon.
Nice. Good idea.
Not a bad idea. We've been speaking about faux parties lately. There might be something on the cards coming up, but I'll reveal that later. Right.
Can I just say one thing before we move on to talking about the incredible Galapagos Islands?
Oh, I can't wait.
I just wanted to mention that, guys, our YouTube channel is now live.
Yes.
So you can go on YouTube and search What The Faux, and that's Faux, P-H-O, the same as the podcast, What The Faux Travel Productions.
Ooh.
I mean, it makes it sound big.
Like we're a big TV company.
Yeah, but we are releasing videos of our trips. So at the moment, you can watch Greece, you can watch Egypt, and you can watch Jordan as well. So those videos are up there, live, ready to go. I think they're about 20 minutes, half an hour. You can see our trip as well as hear it now. Make sure you subscribe, tap the bell as well so you get the notifications. And yeah, you can see our trip. And I've just finished 3 different videos on the Galapagos Islands as well. So they'll be released very soon as well.
They're epic. I really enjoyed watching them.
Oh, I loved editing them as well, watching all the footage back. But anyway, just wanted to quickly say that. Now let's actually talk about the Galapagos Islands.
Let's do it. So I guess it's back to me, isn't it?
It is back to you. It's always your feature.
Game Show Facts. This is the start of a very educational episode. So, as David Attenborough would say, play that music.
That was so good.
The Galapagos Islands is a volcanic archipelago in the Pacific Ocean and on the equator. It's considered one of the world's best destinations for wildlife viewing. Española, the oldest island in the Galapagos, is estimated to be 3.5 million years old, while the youngest, Fernandina, is just 1 million years old and is still forming. A province of Ecuador, it lies about 1,000 kilometers off its coast. Its isolated terrain shelters a diversity of plant and animal species, many found nowhere else. There are 3 different terms used for animals and plants here: endemic, native, and introduced. Endemic means they are only found in the Galapagos, such as marine iguanas. Native animals are found naturally in the Galapagos and elsewhere. The frigate bird is a good example. Introduced species are found in the Galapagos because they were brought here by humans, intentionally or accidentally. For example, rats. The Galapagos is the only place in the Northern Hemisphere where you can see penguins in their natural habitat. Charles Darwin visited in 1835, and his observation of the Galapagos species later inspired his theory of evolution by natural selection. The official language is Spanish, and the population of people is around 35,000. In total, only 3% of the islands have human settlements. The remaining 97% of the Galapagos Islands is maintained as a national park. Up until 2012, the Galapagos Islands were home to the only remaining giant pinta tortoise in the world, known as Lonesome George, until he sadly passed away. Floriana Island was where the Galapagos had its first post office, a barrel where those who passed by the bay could leave mail or take any that they could deliver. Today, the tradition is kept alive by tourists, where you can send a letter from Post Office Bay without a stamp. All you have to do in return is pick up a letter that is directed to where you live.
Brilliant Game Show Facts there, especially that last one. But no, that was really interesting, and I liked how you separated endemic, introduced species and all that. I mean, I've been to the Galapagos, but I learned some things there, Nick.
Great. I've given you all a bit of base knowledge because there's loads more coming up. And yeah, we are really excited to talk about it because it's like nowhere else on Earth. It was so good. Probably our favourite place that we've ever been. It was incredible.
I think, well, it's 100% the best week we've had on this trip. And you guys listen to the podcast religiously, you'll know how much of a brilliant time we've had on this trip. And I'm really, can I just say, I'm not saying this because we're working with Metropolitan Touring. We read reviews before contacting them and saw that they were such a brilliant company. So that's why we wanted to work with them. And I just want to say they 100% delivered, and it really was the best week of this trip.
And let's get into it. And yeah, thanks to those guys. You're listening to this right now.
Now, in this absolute beast of an episode, I think this might be our longest episode yet because there's just so much to say. Lots of facts, lots of experiences to discover, everything. So we're going to be talking about Mosquera Island, San Cristobal, Punta Pit, Santa Fe, South Plaza, Santa Cruz, Puerto Ayora, Española, Punta Suarez, Gardner Bay, Eden Islet. There's so many. North Seymour. There are tons of places to talk about. There's tons of animals to talk about. The giant tortoise, the blue-footed boobies, the red-footed boobies, the Nazca boobies. We have sharks to tell you about, turtles. The mind blows for everything that we need to talk about. It's insane. There's just too much.
It's impossible for you to do this throw ahead because there is so much.
Yeah, but apart from that, all of the animals and everything, we're going to tell you everything about the ship that is our home for the week, our barbecue night, gin 2-for-1 night, everything. Everything is included in this episode. We don't have a game this month, though, but that's just because there's so much to tell you about, and I don't think it's going to lack a game. I think we just need to talk about the brilliance of the Galapagos Islands. If you don't know the Galapagos geography, we covered kind of the center and everything to the east. So we stayed away from Isabella, which is like the big island that looks like the UK, actually. It's a very similar shape.
Correct. But we saw so much. And being on a cruise ship allows you to see so much stuff that you're not normally going to see. Yeah, we went to like some tiny remote places. And how good is it just waking up and like, oh, we're in a different place. And like every time you look out the window, it's an incredible setting.
It was unbelievable. Yeah, it was really nice.
It was proper good. So when we first got on the ship, we had a welcome from the expedition leader, Carlos.
A warm welcome to all of you on board the Santa Cruz 2. My name is Carlos. I'm originally from Quito. I think this type of tourism has become nowadays, I think, the new trend and the new thing that people are doing, which is, I think, it's great. You know, cruising before, you know, is just going on a ship, eating a little bit, going to the pool, having some drinks. But a ship is an amazing way to explore. And if you can ask that to all the people from the 19th, 18th, 17th century, in those days it wasn't that great to be on the ship, but being to the places they were able to go was amazing. And I think this is what we want to recreate, to be allow you to go back to that time when you explore and you investigate and you get educated and just learn every day something. Galapagos is definitely one of those places, and we're going to make the best so you have a beautiful experience with us, and more above that you learn about the wonders of these amazing islands.
Thanks, Carlos. Okay, so before we head into talking about the monster of the Galapagos Islands, we are going to let Mac, the hotel manager, on board the Santa Cruz 2. I was going to say Santa Cruz 2, but then I said it in a Spanish accent instead.
Said it in English, but Spanish accent.
Santa Cruz 2. And he explains our beautiful home for the next week.
We have a capacity for 90 guests. We have 50 cabins available for you. And right now, let me tell you all about all the facilities and services that you will find on board the Santa Cruz 2. This is not a huge ship, but it's kind of big. We have 5 decks available for you. We have brand new machines for you in the gym. And if you go outside the gym, you find the sky deck. This is an open deck. So if you just want to relax, if you want to maybe get a really nice suntan, you can go to this deck. Right above the ship, we have the library. It's a beautiful place, and of course, you will find a very nice selection of books. Then on the midship, right here, we have the discovery room. This is a little room where we have board games, and at the stern, we have 2 jacuzzis for you. One on board is completely safe for you. We have a water processing machine and we have desalinator on board. So we produce our own water. We produce almost 15 tons of fresh water daily. That, of course, it doesn't mean that we can, you know, waste water, but we produce our own water. A couple of guests were asking at the reception about toilet system. This is one of the most asked questions in cruise ships, I believe. Is if you are allowed or not to throw toilet paper inside the toilet? Very good question, actually. On board Santa Cruz 2, as I mentioned, we have a water processing machine, so all the water that we give back to the ocean is completely clean water, and that's why you are allowed to throw toilet paper inside the toilet. But in small amounts, please remember this, small amounts of toilet paper, and then you have to flush. This is because the system is not the same as in mainland, in our homes. So if you throw too much toilet paper, the toilet can get clogged. I don't know if you noticed, but outside of your cabins, you will find red flashing light. So if your toilet gets clogged, an alarm will start, ringing, and this light is going to start to flash. That's how we know which one is causing problems on board.
The toilet squad will show up.
And that'll be announced. Over
the PA, of course, man. Have you been on board already? No. Some of you didn't laugh, so yeah, I must say this is a joke.
I never thought I would ever say this, but my favorite part of the whole ship was actually the library. It was so amazing because every time you went in there, there was a different Attenborough documentary about the Galapagos playing. So if you weren't outside learning about the Galapagos, you were inside the ship watching Attenborough.
That's true. And it's just nice to sit there, relax, watch some TV. And yeah, everything you're watching on the TV, you can see out the window as well. It was quite surreal.
Yeah.
But yeah, very cool place. So much cool stuff on the ship that you heard Mac talk about.
For the benefit of you out there who don't know much about the Galapagos Islands, us included, before the trip, so we spoke to Carlos and we said, what's so special about the Galapagos Island? What's the big deal?
The Galapagos offers you the idyllic conditions to understand selection because you cannot find a place with worse environmental conditions. The dryness as a result of this cold water that comes from the south creates this very, very dry air with very little humidity, no precipitation at all. The water is very cold. It does have a lot of nutrients, but the land is almost a desert. So the forest doesn't really offer you a lot of resources, so you have no food. The amount of leaves and the shade that you can get is minimal. And on the other hand, there's no fresh water. There's only one island that has fresh water, which is San Cristobal. The rest of the islands, you know, the bigger islands, maybe, you know, seasonally you might have some fresh water. So there's no water, there's no food, and there's no shade. So basically, those are the three elements that would basically take you straight to death, right? And that's what it is. So whatever lives here just went through that process. You die or you adapt to these horrid conditions.
And why is this, as far as I'm aware, the only place in the world where the animals, like the nature, they're not shy of humans? You can share a beach with a sea lion. Why?
Okay, now that's actually something that is quite unique. You might find something like this in isolated islands somewhere in the Pacific. I mean, there's still islands that we don't even discover. I mean, just Indonesia is 18,000 islands, you know. So, to understand this, you have, there's two kinds of islands on Earth. You have oceanic islands and continental islands. Oceanic islands are islands that emerge as a result of a volcanic plume or hotspot. Yeah. So Galapagos is a hotspot just like Iceland, Hawaii. But oceanic islands just emerge out of the blue with nothing on them. On the other hand, you have continental islands, which are basically detachments of a continental mass. Actually, the UK is a continental island. What happened at the end of the last glaciation, what is now the English Channel, the oceans rise because there was now all this ice that melted, and this chunk of land got separated from Europe. But there's a similarity in terms of the animals and the plants between this continent and this group of islands, because normally the distance is not that far. So basically there's not a much of a difference in terms of what the animals you see here and what you see there. So why is it that the animals on oceanic islands are going to be not afraid of humans? And it has nothing to do really with the fact that humans have not been there, so the animals are not scared of humans because, you know, they haven't been exposed, which happens. If you go to the Amazon and you've been in areas where there's been hunting, you know, through time because of indigenous populations, a monkey sees you on a canoe and he's out of there because he knows that you are related with a blowgun or something and you're going to be eaten. But the reason why the creatures are not afraid of humans, actually not afraid, not humans, afraid, period, is because in the process of how animals and plants arrive to oceanic islands is based on either you can fly, you can float, you can swim, you can use, it's called vegetation rafts, which are rivers along the western side of South America. When you have a Nino event, where you have big floods or a flash flood, chunks of vegetation flow down rivers and eventually are washed into the ocean and they just drift. That's how the reptiles got here. Now, reptiles can do these long distances because they're animals they were made to colonize, you know, so they don't need to eat all the time. They can basically stay exposed to the sun because they actually like the sun. But there's one group of animals that cannot do that. They cannot swim. I mean, we're talking about that oceanic islands normally are quite far away from a landmass. In this case, Galapagos is 600 nautical miles away from the coast of South America. So there's one group of animals, actually two, but the one that really reflects to what you're asking, there's one group of animals that cannot do that, which are mammals, and particularly mammals, carnivores, which hunt. So the lack of a predator on land has created this behavior of naiveness. Since you're not afraid of something that can be behind a bush, that can just come out of the bush and snap and just break your neck and eat you. And that's why the animals are so, it's the lack of predation in the Galapagos.
So that is it. Thank you, Carlos. The whole magic behind the Galapagos is the fact that the animals are not scared because there's no mammals and no predators.
Yeah, and that was something that I heard time and time again by not only us, other people that were on the ship as well, is that we just couldn't believe how close we'd got to the animal. Obviously, a safe distance from them. We didn't want to, like, invade their space, but everybody couldn't believe how much wildlife we saw, firstly, and secondly, yeah, how close we got. I want to talk about the Big 15 because I didn't know this existed before we went, and it's a bit like in Africa when you go on these game drives, you see the Big Five, you know, the big animals that you want to see. So there's 15 of them in the Galapagos Islands, and I'm going to name them for you now. So we have the Galapagos albatross.
We saw that one. Albatross, biggest wingspan of all the birds. Boom.
There
next.
You go. Oh God, is this like a second game show facts? Number two, the blue-footed booby.
Legends, comedians. Yeah, we saw loads of them.
They are the best personality, and I can't believe how much of a bird watcher I am since the Galapagos. Yeah,
even now, once you got back, Amy's like, oh, that's a condor flying by. I'm like, who are you?
I love it. Number three, the Nazca booby.
They were all right.
Yeah, they were good.
We saw them.
So there's three types of boobies. So I've just said the blue-footed booby, the Nazca booby, and the third one, the red-footed booby, who are cool because they have blue beaks and red feet. You've got the flightless cormorant. Cormorant?
Sounds about right. I don't think we saw that one.
I don't think we saw that one. Didn't really hear much about
that. But interesting, it's flightless because, again, there's no predators. It's food it can easily get to, like, on the land. So it doesn't need to fly. It doesn't need to waste the energy. So over time, it's evolved to not be able to fly.
Amazing. Number six, American flamingo.
We did see them in the distance.
We did. Number seven, frigate birds.
Yeah,
great and magnificent frigate birds.
Don't forget, two categories, great and magnificent. We did see them, big red chests.
Yeah, the single ones have big red chests. Eight, Galapagos hawk. Which
did you say you ate a Galapagos hawk?
Number eight, Galapagos hawk.
Number eight. Did we see that? I'm not sure if we did.
Yes, we did, actually. I think on the second day we went for a walk when we were swimming with the sea lion after. I think
great.
We saw it there. Number nine, the land iguana.
Saw loads of them.
Number 10, marine iguana.
Oh, yeah. They're amazing. Yeah, we saw them.
11, Santa Fe land iguana.
The group did see them, but we didn't. There was a really early morning where we decided to sleep in instead.
Yeah, sorry. Number 12, Galapagos penguin.
Didn't see them.
No, it wasn't the time of year for the penguins, which is a shame because I do love a penguin. 13, Galapagos sea lion.
Oh, sea lions, probably the star of the show, actually. We saw loads of them.
We saw tons. Number 14, Galapagos fur seal.
Yeah.
And 15, Galapagos giant tortoise.
Oh, I'm saying the sea lions are the star of the show. There's so many stars of the show. The
there
giant
really
tortoise,
are.
Obviously.
And that's why they're part of the Big 15.
Great. So we did pretty well. We saw, I think, like 13 or 14 of the Big 15. So we were incredibly lucky.
Right. Let's explain day number one, Mosqueda Island.
God, so much already. We're not even on day one. My good God. So yeah, the first day was really just about arriving, having a lovely lunch on the boat. But then we had the afternoon out, to Mosqueda Island. It's like a sandbank, which is chilling on the beach with sea lions.
Yeah, so this was the first time we saw sea lions, and it blew our minds.
And I think there were maybe these guys, the sea lions, or the blue-footed boobies were people's favourites, but just watching the sea lions is hilarious. They act just like dogs. In fact, they are related to dogs, and you can really tell, can't you?
Yeah, they have so much personality, and I think they kind of like to tease humans a little bit, because as soon as they walk a little bit towards us, we kind of run away. And they clock on, just like a dog. They really learn, and then they start to do that to the other humans that go near them. It's quite funny to watch.
They know what they're doing. But we had to speak to our naturalist guide leader, Viviana, because we were all split into groups, you see, and named after animals from the islands. Obviously, our group
was the booby group.
We were the boobies, so our booby leader, our booby guide, was Viviana. And we sat down with her just after day one, because we'd already seen so much, and we had to fully take in what we saw. So we asked her, where were we today?
We were visiting a beautiful sandbar in between North Timor Island and Baltra Island, that it is known as Mosqueda Islet, where we have a very nice colony of Galapagos sea lions that are endemic species from the Galapagos, that means unique creatures of the Galapagos. We saw also not only these wonderful marine mammals, also we had the chance to see these interesting fish.
We saw sea lions, but what's the difference between a sea lion and a seal?
You have two families that are Otaridae. That means that they have the external ears, that it is Latin name Otaridae. That includes the sea lions and fur seals. They have long front flippers and this ability to walk on land or climb over rocks that can be quite steep. Different from true seals that are known as these Phocidae. Phocidae is a family, that means that they don't have the external ears and they have very short front flippers. A third family that we don't find in the Galapagos either, it is the walruses, that it is an Odobonidae, yes. And in the Galapagos we find only the Otaridae, that means fur seals and sea lions, both with external ears and very large front flippers.
Yeah, okay, and the females, you said they're pregnant a lot. Yes. Am I right in saying, you said that they give birth and then 2 weeks later they're pregnant again?
That's true, that's right.
What birds did we see today and how do you know if they're married?
Oh, okay, so today we were talking about blue-footed boobies, number one, because we are the group of the boobies, obviously.
Yay, booby group. Yeah, booby group.
You are our booby guide.
But I was seeing all these also very large seabird of the Galapagos, that it is a frigate bird. And some of you ask me, what it is the difference between the male and the female? And the males, before they are selected by a female, they are all the time pumping air into this gallar sac, that it is the name of this membrane that looks like a red balloon. Only after a female selects the male is when they don't need to be pumping air into that membrane, because that it is not so easy when you're on flight, that it is a lot of energy that you occupy when you're pumping air into that membrane. And when you're trying to get fish, that big balloon, it is in between, so that it is difficult when you're trying to get food supply. But that it is an advantage if you're like on flight, you're more visible for females when you're available, when you're single. When you are already selected by a female, you don't need to look colorful anymore.
Thanks to Viviana for discussing the difference between sea lions and seals there, because I asked the question because I genuinely didn't know. So also she was talking about frigate birds, and I just want to give you more of a visual of what they look like. So they're massive birds, aren't they? They're
big.
Really big. Well, bigger than anything we have in the UK.
True.
So they're massive birds to us. Now, I want you to imagine that you're blowing up a red balloon, okay? So blow it up to full capacity, a normal size of a balloon, and attach it under your neck so it's sitting on your chest. That's what the frigate bird looks like. And as Viviana explained, it's the bachelors that have that. It's the men, the ones that are single, because they're trying to attract the females to mate with them. So they want to make themselves pretty. And that's the thing I'm really loving about birds at the moment, is that it's the men that chase the women. They're the ones that, you know, basically put all the makeup on, put on the pretty clothes, the high heels, make themselves look good for the women. And I like that.
You're right. Birds, yeah, it's the men that have to look pretty, that make the effort. It always seems to be the same, doesn't it?
Right, so that was day one. Let's talk about day two. Now, this was on San Cristobal Island, and we saw something that I think lots of you, if you want to go to the Galapagos Islands, this is like an absolute 100% must. We saw giant tortoises.
Yeah, and then later that day, we also went to Punta Pit by the ocean. There's like a nice beach, and you can go for a really nice walk around there. We saw more blue-footed boobies, and we actually got the chance to swim with sea lions. But speaking about the giant tortoises, yeah, this is like a reserve where they're protected, where they're born, they spend most of their life. And on San Cristobal Island, like Amy said, which is actually the capital, well, it's where the capital city is of the Galapagos Islands. It's strange being on the Galapagos because we know it's all about nature and animals, but then it has like normal towns. I found that quite fascinating, just walking around a town. I'm like, oh, there's a restaurant, there's an ATM, and we're in the Galapagos. What's going on?
We're in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. What's happening?
Yeah.
But what's weird, even more weird than that, is around these towns, you still have the animals kind of roaming around. So you're walking through a town centre and, oh, there's a sea lion over there.
Yeah, chilling on a bench, yeah. Exactly. It's really amazing to see. You're going to hear from Viviana again. You're going to hear from her a lot. She's a clever lady. She's got lots to tell us. So I wanted to know, after we visited these giant tortoises, why do we need these sanctuaries? Because I'm thinking, you know, they've been here way longer than humans have, and they've been fine, haven't they? So why do we need tortoise sanctuaries?
Because since we have the first settle down of Charles Darwin Foundation, that it is the first science movement here on the island, we start to be more conscious about what we have done since we arrived for the first time in the year 1535, that it is when first mammals were introduced to the Galapagos, and that started to decrease the community's population of giant tortoises. 90% of the population disappeared because of direct human impact, because not only we have introduced all these mammals, we also took 90% of the population as food supply before conservation time.
Okay, but numbers are going back up now.
Yes. Numbers are doing quite good, and we are talking about not the full restoration already, but in the future, yes.
What's the difference between a tortoise and a turtle?
That's very easy. You have tortoises that have elephant feet, and you have turtles that has flippers, fins.
Okay, and finally, the tortoise here, are they the biggest in the world, or do you find bigger in other places around the world?
These are officially the biggest in the world, but you have a second place but where you have giant tortoises that are the Seychelles at the Indian Ocean. It is a group of continental islands.
Both islands, why is that? Because on an island they're protected from predators on the mainland.
Yes. When you have less predators, that it is a reason why phenom of gigantism is possible. But there is a theory that it is much more recent that says that the ancestor of these tortoises were already huge when they arrived.
So, Nick, that is why we need tortoise sanctuaries, to protect them from rats, from the mammals.
Yeah, particularly rats will eat baby tortoises and turtles.
And humans back in the day, because they used to hunt them, which is super sad. But obviously, no one's doing that now, because there's a national park, there's rules, no one's allowed to do that.
Absolutely. But what amazing creatures to watch, how they just walk around in slow motion. They almost don't look real. Like, I don't know, the way their feet and their legs like bend and touch the floor. Yeah, they look like some sort of dinosaurs. They don't look real at all. And then they seem fine and happy. And most of the time, when you then get really close to them, they kind of then go inside their shell really quickly, don't they? Because they still get a bit nervous around humans.
Yeah, and the park was quite funny because there was a path for us to walk on, and surrounded by us was vegetation and trees and places they can walk around, and there's like a feeding center, so they know what time and like when to go get the food, and they kind of all gather in the same place. But on this path, it's all stony, and yeah, it's weird what you're saying. When you're looking at their legs, they just don't look like they've evolved to be able to walk. I know they're known for being slow, but they can actually move quite fast, can't they? They can cover ground pretty quickly. And the thing that I found the most fascinating about them is when two males are up against each other, they lift their neck. And it's kind of to show, you know, I'm the man, I'm the bigger alpha male. And it's whoever can lift their neck as high as possible. So they're just kind of, what would we call it?
Like a standoff between each, a neck off.
Yeah, neck off. And it's really funny. And then until one of them knows, oh, actually, I need to back down. And then they walk off. Or it can get a bit more vicious and they can bite each other.
Oh, yeah, they can do. But amazing, huge animals. So incredible to see them. And a great fact that we learned was that in different parts of the islands, like, they've evolved, the shape of their shell has actually evolved on some islands to allow them to reach up to high food. So you can see, like, the back of their shell really curves up to allow them to reach up for high food. Other tortoises that don't need to reach for high food, their shell is a completely different shape. So that's witnessing evolution. It's really fascinating.
It really was incredible. And not only does the shape of their shell change per island, it also changes per volcano on one of the main islands.
Say
as well.
What?
Yeah, so it depends what volcano they're on and depending on the shape of their shell. And you can see, I mean, I'm not putting down Darwin's work, but I feel like that was one of the best places he could have gone to realize what was going on.
It was obvious. If we went there, we would have realized, oh, they're obviously evolving. Right, yeah, job done.
We would have worked it out easy. I mean, Darwin, you're getting too big for your boots, to be honest.
But then later that day, after seeing the amazing tortoises, yeah, we actually got the chance to do some snorkeling. And in the water with us was a sea lion. Now, being up close to them on land is one thing, but being up close to them in the water, kind of more in the environment they're comfortable with, because on land, if you get too close, they will bite you. But in the water, they just seem super playful. They just want to come up and have a look and see who you are and what you're up to. And
like a dog.
Like a dog. And it's amazing how quick they can swim through the water. Like on land, they look like the most awkward, like bumbling animals. You know, again, it's like their feet or their legs, their fins, whatever they've got. That's for people listening who know what, you know, about biology are going to think you just said that a sea lion has legs. But you know what I mean? The way they walk on land looks so awkward. But in the water, like, they're designed perfectly. How good was that swimming with a sea lion?
Well, I was going to say, I was a little bit scared because they move so fast in the water. And, yeah, they come up to you in your face, you blink and they're gone. I know you shouldn't do this around animals, but I think I screamed a little bit in the water when it came up to me.
It was scary at first.
It was a natural reaction and it kind of scared it. You swam off really quickly.
For sure.
But it was amazing. It was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And it happened later on in the trip as well, which we'll talk about. When we got to swim with a turtle and then a sea lion came up to us at the same time. But we will explain that in a bit.
It just gets better and better. Day numero tres.
Good, that's Spanish there.
That's three. For people who are not as educated as I am, that's number three. What did we do, Amy?
So we went to Santa Fe Island. So this is the place where you'll see land iguanas, and we went snorkeling as well in the afternoon. South Plaza Island, more land iguanas there. We had a happy hour as well in the evening, which was 2-for-1 on the gin and tonics. Lovely. And it was a barbecue, which was great. And that wasn't even dinner. That was just kind of like a pre-dinner snack. But that was all followed by a Darwin lecture by Carlos. And so that's another great thing about the ship, is that not only are you outside on the islands or underwater learning about the Galapagos Islands and all of the wildlife, if you're not doing that, you are on the ship watching Attenborough. If you're not doing that, you're on the ship in a lecture or eating incredible food. It was just a knowledge-filled week. And not in a boring way, it's like, oh, another lecture. Like, they were so interesting. And I think you're only going to be there if you're interested in the Galapagos Islands as well.
Exactly.
This particular lecture was all about Charles Darwin, and it was absolutely fascinating. I didn't really know much about the man, and he's so famous. And English?
Yes.
Just wanted to clarify there. So, yeah, I mean, it's someone we should know about. But, I didn't really know the details. And he's had an interesting life.
He has. So we had to go all the way to South America to learn about this guy from our country. But what is his link to the Galapagos Islands? We're going to go back to Carlos to find out.
Charles Darwin was part of an expedition that departed from Plymouth on December of 1831. And they came back to the same point in 1836. The ship was sent to the southern latitudes of South America because obviously this is before the Panama Canal, and the only way to cross from the Atlantic to the Pacific was around the Horn, which is definitely, if you haven't been there, one of the most horrible waters on Earth. And it's very easy to not make it. So they were looking for an easier way for the ships to be able to move. That was the purpose of the trip. And Charles Darwin was part of this expedition. He was not an officer of the Navy. He was not even a scientist. He went as a companion to just have tea and biscuits with the captain so he would not get bored, the captain.
And his dad really wasn't happy with that, was he?
Charles Darwin came from a family of doctors, and he did not really follow the line which his father, you know, hoped for. So his father was not happy with it, but he did finance that expedition. He paid for his son to get this sabbatic trip for 5 years. He was 5 years at sea. And the Galapagos was the last point that the HMS Beagle did before actually going west into the Pacific. Why did they come here? Just to get food and water. Which was the food? The giant tortoises. They discovered by accident that these giant reptiles could live without food and water for up to a year. Very convenient animal to carry on a ship if you don't have refrigeration. And you're going to be maybe 70, 80, 80 days at sea. And to avoid scurvy and deficiencies of all sorts of minerals and vitamins that happen in those days.
So, of course, Darwin then came up with, at the time, the very radical idea of evolution and natural selection. Of course, back then it was just everyone just accepted the fact that everything was created by a higher power. But it wasn't actually here in the Galapagos where he had his eureka moment about evolution, was it? It was actually somewhere else.
That's the broken telephone concept about Charles Darwin, that many people think that the Galapagos at that point, because it did later on, but at that point, like we just discussed, was the place where he got enlightened, you would say. The eureka moment really happened somewhere in 1832 along the eastern coast of South America in southern Patagonia. Patagonia is a region of South America that is shared by what is now Argentina and Chile. And it's a vast extension of wind-swept, mostly inhospitable land that it was exposed for a long, long time to glaciation. So Darwin and Fitzroy were on a place called Monte Alto, near Bahia Blanca. So they found this fossil record of these little mollusks and shells on a layer and embedded in this rock. They found this fossil record that Darwin, even though he was not, I would not consider that he was, you know, a fully scientist at the time, but he was a man, extremely good observer, and he related the bones that he had found with animals that are alive. And he came to the conclusion that there's a scientific anomaly, like a replacement in time among creatures that were extinct with animals that are living in present day. And there was a connection, there was a link, which at the time he didn't really understood properly, but he knew that it existed. And I think when he saw this scientific anomaly of this replacement in space, and then in time too, he focused on this finding, this anomalies and this constant, until he was sure enough that it was enough evidence to actually come and put this idea against the church and creationism, which is, I mean, it's, I don't think no one on earth has ever come with such an idea that can just basically shake the foundation of an institution that has been going on for 2,000 years, you know.
Absolutely. With his book, wasn't that published after he died? Because he didn't want to do it when he was alive?
He wanted to do that.
Oh.
Originally he wanted to do it, but because of another man, another famous gentleman, Alfred Russel Wallace, which is the co-founder of the theory of evolution. Wallace had come to the same conclusions as Darwin, and because, I mean, you know how it is in every profession, everybody wants his 15 minutes of fame. So Alfred Russel Wallace wanted to publish his work to the world. So the Geographic Society knew that Charles had been working for such a long time on this. And they basically said, hey, Charles, if you don't publish, Mr. Wallace is going to take all the credit. And I think that's not a good idea. So they made a joint paper in front of the Linnaeus Society, and basically that's when he, because, I mean, with such a radical idea, Darwin's dangerous idea, like there's even a book written called like that, you would want to do it post-mortem, obviously, for the whole political issues behind it. But because of the pressure of Wallace, he had to publish.
You did just hear that correctly. So Charles Darwin wasn't even a scientist at the time. How inspirational is that? I mean, it even happens today so many times where your family has a family business, whether that is being a doctor or it's a shoe company or anything, and your family want you to carry on that tradition. You know, sometimes you just have to go with your gut and know what you want to do, and you can be yourself for one, and secondly, achieve incredible things. Like, how incredible, he went on this 5-year journey, didn't know where he was going, wanted to be good friends with Fitzroy, the captain. And also, the fun fact about him was that he got really bad seasickness.
Oh yeah, he hated life on the ship, apparently. Yeah.
And he was at sea for 5 years. I mean, I just find him incredibly inspiring.
Yeah, he'll go down in history as one of the most famous scientists ever. And he wasn't even a scientist. It shows what's possible. You can be anything you want to be, kids.
There you go. That's inspirational words from Nick Thompson from What the Faux Travel podcast there.
But interesting from Carlos, everything you said. He's an interesting guy. He knows a lot of stuff. He's been a lot of places. He's worked in the Amazon. He's worked in Antarctica as well. Obviously, Galapagos. He's been all over the place. So we really enjoyed talking to Carlos. We could listen to him for hours.
Literally hours.
And we could also listen to his impressions.
Yes.
So he has a great albatross and booby impression.
Listen to this.
Uh-huh, uh-huh, uh-huh.
Oh, wait, how is the blue go? Shh. That is unbelievable.
So good. So the first one was an albatross. The second one was blue-footed booby. And Amy does a good blue-footed booby impression as well. The male blue-footed booby.
Yeah, because they like whistle, don't they? They go like... So that's ours. I don't think it competes with Carlos's one, but I love the males. They have so much personality because we were there at a brilliant time. We saw a lot of the blue-footed boobies mating and they do this dance, and the way they walk and gently place their feet down on the ground is so cute. And then they puff their arms out and they whistle and they give each other little presents like little feathers. It's so cute. But on the disgusting side of things, they to kind of mark their territory when they're mating and producing a young is they poo in a circle. So when you're walking around, you just see loads of white circles of poo, which is lovely.
Yeah, like their nest, their area is made out of poo. But yeah, you're right, watching them is hilarious. And at one point, again, we were split into groups, like we said, we came across a male blue-footed booby and it was doing the mating dance to one of like the women in our group.
Yeah, I think she was wearing blue shoes and our naturalist guide Viviana was saying maybe he's getting confused because you've got blue feet.
But they were comedians, and this is another mention to the videos Amy made about Galapagos. Perfect opportunity to see them. Watch the videos on our YouTube channel, because it's all very well us talking about it now and you're learning a lot and hearing a lot, but of course you have to see the real thing. I keep my hands on myself. Day 4. Thanks, Duolingo.
So on this day, we went to Santa Cruz Island, and this is where our naturalist guide Viviana is from. I want to give a big shout out and say that she was born in the Galapagos Islands.
She's endemic.
She is endemic.
She's not found anywhere else in the world.
Which is so fascinating. So her parents worked in science in some way or shape or form?
Yeah, I think her dad was one of the first guides on the Galapagos Island, a naturalist guide. And that's where she does it.
How incredible. It's just amazing. And before going, we didn't know if that was a thing. You know, are humans endemic? And are they born? They're not endemic, but are they born in the Galapagos Islands? And yeah, she was, which is so fascinating. On this island, we saw more giant tortoises and went to the Darwin Research Station. This is Nick's favourite island as well, I think, isn't it?
It was. It was just a beauty. Like, not just for the nature, but the town as well. I prefer this town, and what I'd actually say to people who want to go and kind of do the Galapagos themselves, like, we're saying that this is the best way to see the Galapagos on a cruise ship. It's not the only way. We're always honest with you guys. You could fly there and you can try and do it yourself. This is the island I'd recommend go to, Santa Cruz. It's kind of in the middle of all the action, and I thought it was a really nice town compared to the other, where the capital is, San Cristobal Island. I thought this town on Santa Cruz was nicer. That's why it's my favorite town.
Yeah.
My favourite island.
I think I would agree with that as well. So on this island, we did some afternoon biking and it was so hot. I think it reached like 41 degrees.
Biking was a bad choice.
And this was the day that we had lunch off the boat as well. We went to a beautiful restaurant. We learned how to make moonshine.
Now, he's going to do something. He's going to show you how strong it is in the fire. Yes.
Uno, dos, y tres.
Yes. That was the fire there when making the moonshine.
Gasolina.
It was to test that the alcohol was pure and strong.
And it was.
We also went to a beach where we saw flamingos, and we had local dancing in the evening, which I loved, like this Ecuadorian entertainment with a great band, and it was just all beautiful.
Welcome to Galapagos, welcome to this show. Tonight we're going to have a music, like South American music, and also, of course, from Galapagos, Colombia, Peru, and also Ecuador, you know?
Chicos!
Yeah.
That was the local music that we listened to, and the eagle-eared. What animal has good hearing? Elephants? The elephant-eared.
No, the elephants have good memory.
Or good smell.
Good hearing.
What animals have good hearing? Bats, they use echolocation. The bat-eared.
Aren't bats deaf?
No, they're blind.
Oh, okay.
That's why. I don't know. The bat-eared listeners.
I mean, you can
see
that we needed to go to the Galapagos because we don't know much about animals.
The people with good hearing out there would have also heard the Macarena chucked in there for good measure.
Oh, so God.
That was fun watching the local music and the local dancers.
Can I just explain the dancers?
Please.
So there was three young women dancing and they came out with different outfit changes. And one of the outfits they were wearing were these really big skirts and they had kind of Ecuadorian scenery on them and they were spraying them out as they danced. And oh, they looked beautiful. They just looked so good. And they did get us up, didn't they? I think you were one of the first people that one of the girls picked up.
I've got one of them faces. People, when there's a performance going on, they see me in the crowd and think, that guy wants to get up. And I don't. But I normally get pulled up to these things.
Yeah. But again, then everybody got up, didn't they? And then everybody was doing some salsa, and it was really nice.
Again, it's in the video. Go check it out. You can see us doing some awkward dancing. But yeah, earlier that day, we were at the Darwin Research Station. Now, the purpose of this place is, like we said, research, really. And they actually play a key role advising the Ecuadorian government about the animals that live on the island and what, you know, kind of policies and rules they can put in place to protect these animals. It's a bit similar to the tortoise sanctuary we went to a few days ago. Again, there are tortoises there, baby tortoises, you know, making sure they can grow up protected away from mammals that would be harmful to them.
Iguanas there. There's a large range of animals.
Yeah, not just tortoises. And it's also a place where you can just learn a bit more about Charles Darwin. So there was an interesting place to go to.
I was just going to say at the Charles Darwin Centre, of course, there's a gift shop as well. And also on the cruise ship as well. And they all have these Galapagos t-shirts and they're great, aren't they? Because they say, I love boobies on them.
Yeah, and there's also a good one. It's like the style of that famous Beatles album when they're walking across a zebra crossing, but instead of the Beatles there's like a
blue-footed booby and then an
iguana,
albatross,
yeah, and a tortoise or whatever. You can get some good merch from the Galapagos.
Definitely.
And when you wear your t-shirt, people be like, oh, that's impressive, you've been to Galapagos Islands. But we couldn't afford to buy a t-shirt.
Which is actually what we did, because before we went to the Galapagos Islands we met a guy in Brazil and he was wearing the Beatles album and we was like, oh wow, that's such a cool t-shirt. I just feel like compared to other places they've got really good merch.
And I think at the time we said to him, yeah, we thought about Galapagos but we don't think we're gonna go. And he was like, it's totally worth it, mate. Can you guess what country he's from?
Australia.
No, India. Yeah, Australia. Yeah, and he was kind of the first person that said to us, no, it's really worth it, you should go. So back to the moonshine. Maybe you're like Amy and you think that moonshine is the name of an actual drink. Well, it's not. Moonshine is just the term used for a spirit that is homemade.
Oops, I did learn that moonshine is not the name of an actual drink. It is kind of a term for all spirits.
Correct. And the guy who worked at this place making the moonshine is a bit of a lad, wasn't he?
He really was.
Yeah, chuck the moonshine on this fire and it's like a, you know, not explosion, but you know, there's a bit, the fire kind of erupts up to show how much alcohol's in it. And then he went to throw a bit on your face, like pretending. And then as you like kind of jumped, he was going, ah! But he's like a proper old boy, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And then he gave you a hug afterwards.
Oh, he was super cute. He was my new best friend. And also at this place, we not only learnt about moonshine, but also about how to make coffee, because it was on a coffee farm, and also chocolate as well. Another knowledgeable day, just learning not only about the animals, but what you can produce on the islands as well.
Loads, mate. And this knowledgeable day carried on because later we actually got the chance to meet the captain.
Yes, Captain Christian.
Hello, Captain.
Yes.
Hello.
Hello, nice to meet you.
I was waiting for you.
Thank you for meeting us.
Hey, welcome. Ooh, hello. This looks cool.
So anyone can do this. It's not just us. We weren't getting special treatment. If you want to, you can visit the captain and check out the bridge, not the cockpit.
No.
That's what I thought it was.
Yeah, that's on a plane, Nick. So we're on a cruise ship and it's called the bridge. And the reason it's called the bridge is because you can go from one side of the ship to the other by a bridge. And it's the only place on the ship that you can do it.
So we started by asking Captain Christian, how difficult is it technically to sail around the Galapagos Islands?
The good on the Galapagos Island, first of all, is the weather. So the weather is all the year long very calm. No storms, no heavy rains or no heavy seas. That's the best thing. Also, there are not so many ships on the Galapagos Islands. So we are traveling almost alone from one place to another, which make this kind of navigation really, I mean, well, not easy, but not stressful.
This is actually our first time on a cruise ship, but as cruise ships go, this is quite a small one, isn't it? So if for some reason you had to emergency stop, how long would it take for a ship this size to stop?
This is a small ship, as you said, yeah. Nowadays, a small ship for passengers, for example, is 400 passengers and up. To stop the ship, it will take about 1 mile.
So that in time would be, what, 10 minutes?
No, not 10 minutes, and 5 minutes.
Oh.
5 minutes, and could be less. The brakes of the ship are full backwards with the engines.
Mm-hmm.
But if you pull full backwards, it will stop in 2 minutes.
Wow.
Okay.
So much faster than I thought.
Yeah, because some of the real big... The big ships can take,
they take 45 minutes.
45 minutes to stop.
Yeah.
I'm interested to know how many years of training do you have to go through to be a captain of a ship?
There are two different ways to become a captain, in our country at least. The one is the Navy, which was my way, and the other way is the Merchant Marine. The Merchant Marine is also a school for navigators, more or less controlled from the Navy, also the teachers and everything. But especially only for seafarers, which goes overseas. For example, for tankers, for container ships, passenger ships, the Navy, of course, for warships. And my special field was a submarine. I spent 9 years on board submarines in the Navy.
Wow.
But I was very happy when I came here to passenger ships. The school takes about 4 years. After 4 years, you get your officer license, your second officer license. And in our country, after 5 years more, so you present again to the school, you make some...
Like an exam?
Examinations, and for your first officer license. Then after 5 years, again the same, and you get your captain license. That means it will take 15 years, at least.
Was it part of your exam to learn other languages? Because I noticed in your welcome speech you spoke in Spanish, in English, and then in German.
German,
yeah, wow.
Yes. This is a coincidence. When I joined the Ecuadorian Navy, I got on a scholarship to study in the German Navy. So I made my studies 4 years in the German Navy.
Wow.
I became a Fähnrich zur See, an Ecuadorian officer, but in a German Navy. And then I studied the submarine and the submarine force, which were German submarines built in Kiel. I married to a German girl in Germany. My children were born in Germany.
Mm-hmm. That's the reason then, love. That's always the best way to learn a new language.
The dictionary with long legs.
As you can hear there, our captain was an absolute lad. So he's learned languages because of his dictionary with legs, long legs.
Because of the women. That's motivation, isn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, what a lad. But what a nice guy and interesting guy. And thanks, Captain Christian, for showing us around the bridge.
And for navigating us around the Galapagos Islands. It was beautiful. And yeah, he was a really, really nice guy and so approachable as well, which I think is really nice. And because this took our virginity of being on cruise ships.
You did what?
It took our virginity. We'd never been on a cruise ship before.
That's true.
So it was really nice. And you kind of have this perception. And I know some cruises are like this, but you have to wear special clothes at dinner and... You know, always wear a dinner suit and you couldn't possibly meet the captain. You know, it's just not pretentious at all. This was so nice. Everybody was really comfortable. You can talk to whoever you want and yeah, go to the bridge, meet the captain. And it was really lovely.
Amy, how do you say the word day in Spanish? Dia.
Dia.
Dia cinco.
There you go. Day five. Did you not know how to say day? I feel like your Spanish is better than that.
I just said dia. I said, is it dia? And you said, yeah.
Oh, I thought I said, okay.
So I did know how to say it. Day five, Española Island.
Yes. Now, this is Captain Christian's favourite island, and I think I'm going to have to agree with him. This is my favourite as well. On this island, Española Island, we saw albatrosses, which was amazing because we hadn't seen them yet. Blue-footed boobies, marine iguanas, and a blowhole. Which we will explain. I mean, it's very impressive. We saw some amazing coastline. We went to Gardner Bay, White Coral Beach to snorkel, which was the best beach that we went to.
It was
like, it looked like the Maldives. Clear waters and pure white sand. It was beautiful. And then after that, we went and had some time in the hot tub on the ship.
Yes, we did. The only chance we got because we were so busy, but we did enjoy the hot tub at sunset, which was the best end to the day. But yeah, Española Island was a beauty. It had real dramatic cliffs, you know, along the coast where the waves were hitting. And of course, you can see all sorts of animals. Yeah, we saw albatrosses taken off. These are the birds with the biggest wingspan. They look very impressive.
And is this where the cactus island was?
No, that was later or another day.
Okay.
Yes, so that's a tease. Cactus Island. Oh, all this amazing stuff we're talking about. And you're like, was that where the cactuses were? But one thing that was amazing, Española Island, we saw loads, like hundreds, maybe thousands of marine iguanas.
Oh, yeah, this place. Okay, I'm with you now.
Now, these guys are amazing because this is like what the Galapagos is all about. These guys are the best example of evolution because, yeah, they're the only marine iguanas in the world. Normally, they're all based on land. But when these guys came to the Galapagos on these vegetation rafts that we were told about earlier...
Sounds like some like infestation where they like work together to build these rafts so they could get to the Galapagos Islands.
Vegetation rafts, yeah. But these guys are amazing. So when they first arrived, they were just normal land... And how do you say the... I say iguana, but you're saying iguana.
Well, yeah, I guess you are pronouncing it correctly because you're saying all the letters in the word. But yeah, people say iguanas.
Yeah. Got it.
Iguana.
Okay.
Potato.
So these guys have evolved to, yeah, adapt to their surroundings. They can swim, they can dive, so they can hold their breath to go underwater to get food. They mainly feed on like seaweed in the water. And not only have they learnt how to swim, because they're underwater a lot, their body kind of naturally absorbs salt. They get salt like in their blood. They've even evolved something that works a bit like a kidney to remove the salt from their blood. And they sneeze it out, don't
it's
they?
Incredible, isn't it?
It so, looks like they're just proper snotting, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's a bit like if a camel spits at you or something. So when you're walking through, you have to be really careful because otherwise they'll just snot all this salt on you. Yeah, and again, that's another thing you can see on the video that I made, and I put it in slow motion so you can see it.
Oh, you can see them proper like gozzing out of their nose. But it looks like they're sneezing and like all this snot comes out, but and yeah, they're just removing the salt.
You can see their belly, that like when they're laying down, their belly kind of goes out to the side and it just really presses in. It's like they're kind of, when you get CPR, you know, when someone's pressing on
when
your chest.
When they sneeze, yeah.
Yeah, like their whole body just really inverts really quickly as they're snorting out. It looks amazing.
But they are impressive guys. And impressive guys, and get sexist of me. You knew what I meant. Impressive animals. You knew what I meant. But also on this island, yeah, Amy said the amazing news that there is a blowhole. It's just like, if you time it right, you can get a good picture. As the waves come in, you know, as the waves come in, the water's forced through a little crack in the rock and just water blows up really high. And yeah, it's quite cool. If you time it right, you can get some good pictures.
Yeah, so that was a brilliant day, day five. On the day, we thought it was our favourite day, but then it ended up being day six.
Oh, yeah.
That was our favourite day.
But because after the hot tub and sunset,
what happened? Something incredible happened, and it just blew our minds. So I think we were relaxing in our room, and, well, I was relaxing. You were doing the laundry, like the good housewife that you are.
That's me.
And you went out to the washing machines that were on the ship, and they're kind of outside, and you saw loads of people gathered outside. Next thing I know, you run back to the room and you're like, Amy, quick, come out here. There's tons of sharks. And I thought, like, by tons of sharks, I thought you meant like five or six. We went outside and honestly, there must have been about 200 Galapagos sharks just off the side of our boat.
I think more. It was an amazing sight to see. One of the most incredible things I've ever seen in person, live. They were going after all these flying fish. Just everywhere you looked, it was kicking off. There was,
it really was. A lot of thrashing.
So much thrashing. If that's what you're into, you would have had the best night of your life.
Is it on Friends where Chandler's watching shark porn?
Yeah, well, Monica thinks he is.
Yeah, but he isn't.
Yeah, she's like, do you want me to get in the tub and thrash? But, oh my good God. Like,
it was insane.
I could have stayed there all night. It was properly amazing.
So after, we actually went to Carlos and asked why the sharks were there, because we knew for sure this is such an ecological tour, they definitely wouldn't be feeding the sharks so that they came as entertainment for us. And if any ship is doing that, then you need to jump ship. Well, maybe not around the sharks, but get off that ship, because that's not right. So we asked good old Carlos, who knows everything about the Galapagos, why are there so many sharks outside the ship?
I think the best analogy to understand that is like if you would be camping and you're next to a campfire. What happens when you're next to a campfire at night? You have zillions of little insects coming around because they're attracted by the light. The same thing is happening when you have a ship. This normally tends to happen in a very dark night. Now the ship is generating light, you know, just like that campfire. And from the bottom of the sea, if you see the water column, there's many little creatures that feed during the night. And when they see this source of light, they will be attracted to it. So the whole food chain goes and travels along the water column towards the surface. So the flying fish is going after the zooplankton, the little, you know, larvae and the small fishes and things that are going out there to eat the plankton and the smaller stuff. So the flying fish are going after that. But at the same time, the sharks know that all the food chain is getting higher, they're going to be attracted as well to this very easy source of food.
Thank you, Carlos, as ever, for all the wealth inside that big brain of yours. Now, for our next interview, Viviana is back by popular demand, of course. There's a lot of talk about boobies.
And there's a lot of whistling.
So, yeah, we wondered if our guide Viviana likes boobies.
Boobies? Yes, of course.
How many boobies have you seen in your life?
A couple thousand boobies.
What's your favourite colour? Like red or blue?
Nazca boobies, actually.
Oh, Nazca. Okay, so, of course, we're talking about birds that are from the Galapagos Islands. Are boobies only found on these islands, in the Galapagos?
Nazca boobies, yes. We have a couple thousand of these breeding pairs that only lives on this island.
And the blue-footed and red-footed boobies anywhere else in the world?
Yes, we have blue-footed and red-footed boobies on different places in the world. Let's talk about red-footed boobies. You can find them in the Azores. It is also a group of volcanic islands, Canary Archipelago. And blue-footed boobies, the nearest place to find them, besides the Galapagos, it is the coastline of Ecuador.
And how can you tell between a female and a male?
Blue-footed boobies have a different sound. Females, they have a honking voice and the males has this whistling voice. And females are way much bigger than males and the male has a tiny eyeball and the female has a very large black eye. With the albatross, it's very, very hard to tell. It's just like with flamingos and other species because, like the gulls, they look very alike.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, we are looking at albatrosses right now. What can the total wingspan of an albatross be?
This is the most tropical species of albatross. This is known as a waved albatross. So this is not the biggest. The biggest from the Galapagos, yes. We are talking about 2 meters, 30 centimeters. That means that this is 6 feet, almost 7 feet.
Yeah, almost seven foot wingspan. Wow.
Yes.
There we go. That was my husband Nick being a little bit silly with Viviana there.
She's talking about birds.
Yeah, okay. Well, I don't know. I think she clocked on after a while, didn't she?
Took a little while. And then she kind of laughed along with it. Oh, I see what you're doing. Right, I get this all the time. Okay, carry on.
You're being an immature man once again. Anyway, yeah, so great interview there, Nick.
Thanks.
I think. But we were a little bit confused about the citizenship of the Galapagos Islands. I know we spoke about it a little bit before that our naturalist guide Viviana was born in the Galapagos. But we didn't know if anyone can actually say they are native to the Galapagos Islands.
We don't have native people in the Galapagos. But what we say is that we arrived to the islands looking to get a decent life. And that's why people that were initially fishermen and farmers were invited to live on the islands. Yeah, because the islands initially were penal colonies. But as soon as penal colonies finished, the islands were uninhabited again. Mm-hmm. That is why they invite people from, not only from Ecuador, from any place around the planet to move into the Galapagos. And the reward was to get free land. Every 10 years, they used to be like getting more and more free land as they wished. But it was like only to motivate them to do farming and stay living on the island. Not all the islands has fresh water, and that was the reason why not all the islands were colonized. Mm-hmm. Only 5 of them are colonized, and only 1 of them has fresh water. That it is San Cristobal, the capital, that it is where we're going tomorrow.
So would you just say, if you're from Galapagos, are you Ecuadorian? Do you have an Ecuadorian passport, or is it different?
We are Ecuadorian, but I can say that we are privileged that we born in the Galapagos. So born in the Galapagos is a real privilege because we live in a national park, but living in a national park involves many responsibilities as well. And also living on these isolated group of islands that are quite young also means that you cannot get all the supplies, all the time. So you have to, like Darwin's theory of evolution, you have to adapt, and like
this,
pretty much. Like this, what we did since we arrived to live on the islands, not saying colonize the islands, just to live on the islands and to try to make a decent life on the islands. Because we started to have, only since the last 30 years, the boom of the tourist activities. But earlier than that, it was like fishing or farming activities, exclusive.
While on the topic of citizenship, our guide Viviana also explains some interesting facts about it.
Since year 1998, we have a special law that it is an organic law, different from any Ecuadorian law. That means that people cannot stay longer than not even 90 days. It is nowadays 2 months. That is also something that has been changed in the law very recently. And the only way that you should get the right to move to the Galapagos legally as a permanent resident would be marrying a local person. And staying married for 10 years, giving you afterwards the right to get your permanent ID. But what happens if you're like working for an institution or a foundation here in the Galapagos? That foundation or public or private institution is in charge of renewing you every 6 months this temporary ID.
Now that's one of the really interesting things about Santa Cruz too as well. So all of the staff on the ship are either from the Galapagos Islands or from Ecuador. That's it. You know, so you always know that you're around local people, which makes the tour all the better because, you know, you can be sitting at the bar and learn from the barman about his country and where he's from. You know, you can learn from everyone and everyone has such a wealth of knowledge. I really can't recommend it enough. It really is amazing.
Yeah, and so they're also offering jobs to local people. Yeah, they're not just flying in people from all around the world and taking local people's jobs. We had a quick conversation with a photographer and we asked him, are you from the Galapagos? He said, no, I'm not. But they did try to find one in the Galapagos Islands. They couldn't, so then they went to Ecuador. That was plan B, and there's no plan C. Issa Torres on the beat, boys. Dia, have I got it wrong? Dia.
Yeah, Dia.
Dia seis.
Very nice. Yeah, so we are back on Santa Cruz Island, which we went to on day 4, but like a different side of it. This time we were at Eden Islet, and then later on we went to North Seymour Island as well.
Now this was your favourite day, wasn't it?
It really was. It was brilliant. It was just from start to finish, everything was amazing. We started the day by kayaking, where we saw a turtle. Actually, we started the day by walking to breakfast and saw two turtles.
Oh, out the window. Yeah, you're right.
Oh, it was fantastic because we saw one and he was kind of bobbing his head up. And then we noticed there was a second one and it was actually the male was under the female one.
Yeah.
So they were having a good old morning together.
Oh, I see. Morning delight.
Yeah, so we kayaked in the morning, we went snorkeling, and then went snorkeling again. Actually, we went snorkeling twice, and then we had a walk to kind of finish off the whole tour at sunset, which was amazing. So going more into detail, after kayaking in the morning, where we was going past mangroves when we were kayaking, which was cool.
The water was really calm. Yeah, the sun was shining. It was a pleasant experience, wasn't it?
Yeah, it wasn't like when you're kayaking and it's super difficult and it hurts your arms. It was just very pleasant. It was lovely. And we went out with the photographer as well. And that's another thing with the cruise, is that you have a photographer out with you during the day and he kind of skips around the different groups. And then at the end of the whole tour, you get a presentation and everyone gets the photos and videos for free. Well, included in the price of the tour, obviously.
You've paid for it. But yeah, there's us thinking at the end of the trip, if you want to pay, you can have all these professional photos. But no, you get it, including the price, which is fantastic. So if you're looking at our Instagram thinking, oh, Nick and Amy got some good pictures of Galapagos,
No, we didn't. They're from the photographer. Thank you very much. So we've got to talk about what happened this morning. The snorkeling we did was one of the most amazing, and I've said this a lot on this trip because it's true, one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. First of all, swimming with a turtle. Like, amazing, right?
It had brilliant patterns on it as well. And yeah, I think we were swimming with it for about 10 minutes.
It was majestic. I loved it. I don't know what else to say. It was so cool. But then later, wow, we were, you know, swimming in the water still, doing a bit of snorkeling, and suddenly we're surrounded by 100,000s, like so many fish. Normally when you're snorkeling, you see a few fish, I mean, that's great. They were everywhere. We were surrounded. And as a result of that, all the pelicans flying above us could see all the fish. So now they're diving into the water. Everywhere we look, there are pelicans diving in. And when you go under the water with your goggles on, you see the pelican dive in, catch a load of fish in its beak, and then it's off again. And we just felt like we were in the middle of like the most spectacular nature show on TV, didn't we?
Yeah.
It was incredible.
Yeah, I'm lost for words to explain how it felt. Like with the shark, it was incredible watching them off the boat, but this just blew my mind because we really were in the center of it. I mean, I was seeing pelicans dive about half a meter away from Nick. I was like, I think they're trying to eat you. Like they were really diving in, and just, yeah, to see the way they dive through, and then because you've got your snorkeling gear on, you can look under as soon as they dive, and the way they just encapsulate all of those sardines in their beak, it just really nets out. It's just unbelievable the way that nature works.
So after an incredible morning seeing all the, or incredible day seeing all the life underwater and above, the birds flying in, we finished off that day and we finished off our Galapagos trip with a walk around North Seymour Island to see the sunset. And we got to see a lot of our favourite animals again, the sea lions, iguanas, the blue-footed boobies as well. And that was it. It was kind of like the perfect end to a once-in-a-lifetime trip.
But don't take our word for how great it was, because you need to listen to this lot.
The Galapagos Islands have been absolutely fantastic. The endemic species and even some of the invasive species have been incredible, and it has been rather a privilege to come and view them and see them. And the geology is spectacular. Like, this hotspot area is just awesome.
Yeah, the Galapagos is amazing. It's an absolute dream for anyone who wants to come and see the wildlife. For photography, you don't get to view islands created by a hotspot very often.
Oh, they're amazing. Just the raw nature. And I'm glad that somebody is trying to preserve some of the stuff, because, you know, I'd love to see it go on for multiple generations, because it's sadly kind of going away in our world, because man is being pretty tough on the world.
Amazing. Great place to spend a week. Loads going on, loads of wildlife, nice boat, it's been good.
And do you think it's a good place for a honeymoon?
Definitely, yeah. You can kind of take it easy, but you can also keep yourself busy as well. And the rooms are nice and comfortable, it's been good.
Yeah, they get changed 3 times a day, which is lovely.
the rooms, not us.
Yeah. and then, yeah, you're pretty much fed constantly, which is also nice.
I think that the Galapagos Islands are a really special treasure for all humanity, for it provides an incredible lab for research, a place for people to come and learn about not only our origins, but how to preserve and be respectful of nature.
Well, I would recommend the Galapagos Islands for anyone who's looking for a very exciting destination and some insight into their own origins and to become more familiar with conservation and how species evolve, change shape and basically morph into other species.
I want to live here. This is the most beautiful place on Earth, and you really have to see it to believe how stunning it is.
What do you think of the ship and the crew?
Oh, they're amazing. They're really attentive. I don't know if this would be part of your show, but I have a pair of Tevas that I've had for a long time, and the heels started to peel away. Luis said, oh, we can fix those. And he took them away, brought them back, and they were fixed. And so to me, that was amazing, because I was looking, where am I going to buy some more Tevas? But they fixed them.
The service is just spectacular. I think our rooms get cleaned about 4 times a day.
Yeah.
The food is amazing. And the turndown service of the little chocolates on the pillow are just a very nice touch.
They're also really knowledgeable about all of the animals and the islands, which is really interesting as well, so it gives you a lot of background to what you're seeing.
They make everybody feel important, which is great.
I feel that the crew have obviously been well selected and well trained. They are very responsive to people's needs, and they are very knowledgeable as far as the islands are concerned.
The crew, spectacular, flawless. They're currently cleaning our rooms for the fifth time today.
Everyone says that.
The crew have been amazing. I lost my luggage and it didn't quite make it to the Galapagos, but they've been so helpful, and the ship has a washing machine. I think I was the most excited person about the washing machine, but it's just been a wonderful experience from start to finish.
And lastly, can you run us through some of the highlights of your trip so far?
Oh, that's difficult.
It's a pretty tricky thing to do.
I've enjoyed seeing the boobies mating dance with the whistling and the tail feathers going up. I think that's been pretty spectacular.
Baby hammerheads was pretty cool.
Last night when we saw hundreds of sharks swimming around the boat, feeding on flying fish, that was pretty amazing. Seeing the blue-footed boobies, they're brilliant. They're like little comedians.
I think just being able to get so close to the wildlife, I just didn't really expect that.
Being this my third time, I always thought that Española Island was the very best or my favorite, and I confirmed that yesterday.
So hard to pick one, but I think it was when we were snorkeling off the beach and the sea lion was playing with us. That was something that you just can't get anywhere else, I think.
That was the end of our trip. You've just heard from us like how amazing we thought it was. Proper once-in-a-lifetime trip. You've heard from other people on the ship, other passengers, customers, if you like. But that's not the end of this episode, because when we then flew back to Ecuador, we were in Quito, the capital city, and we even popped in to Metropolitan Touring to give them a little visit, didn't we?
Yeah, it was really lovely. They have a really cool office. It's a bit like Google, where everything's kind of open space, and they were actually watching football when we were there, because it's the American Cup here in South America, Copa de America, and yeah. So they were watching football in the office. It's a pretty cool place.
So while we were there, we spoke to Klaus and Sherry-Ann, and we asked them, how are you guys making sure that everyone can see these amazing Galapagos Islands, but doing it in a sustainable and eco-friendly way?
I would say this year, we're turning 50, celebrating our first ship in the Galapagos ever, which happens to be Galapagos' first ship to begin with. And the relevant part of that is that the national park was created 60 years ago. We were the first company to hire locals in Galapagos and not just the scientists from abroad. Everything that is from the business part of this company, everything is staying in Ecuador, is staying in Galapagos, and it's staying in Ecuador, not just by jobs or paying taxes, but everything is reinvested here. And we try to use as much as possible locally. That's one thing. We are one of the first ships that had holding tanks for black and gray waters. We produce our own water. Now, that's no surprise. Most of the ships do that. We try to be in the latest technology for the environment. And that means the engines run on diesel. In the past, we had lots of ships running on bunker, which is a lot more profitable. But it's environmentally always a big risk. So it's always, you know, the environment. The environment is, you know, first when we look at things. We are, as a company, carbon neutral since 2017. And this year, all of our products, every time you come with us to the Galapagos, it's also carbon neutral. You have to know that Galapagos is like Easter Island or like Mauritius or like the Seychelles. There are 30,000 people who live in Galapagos, and all the people who come to the Galapagos Islands, which in the national park is about a little bit under 70,000 people a year, with another 200,000 that stay in towns and don't go into the national park, that for their needs, everything has to be flown in. So the environmental impact for tourism in Galapagos is, of course, high. Tourism is what makes the Galapagos possible to be protected over these years, and we have made enormous steps in terms of conservation, but this is because of tourism. If tourism wasn't there, you would have probably lost the Galapagos a few decades ago. In fact, it's ironic that until 1959, Galapagos was a prison colony, and then 1959 it became a national park. So the same place where you were punished to be sent, suddenly it became, you know, a treat, an expensive treat, but a treat nevertheless, to be there.
Now, Klaus, you were saying that Metropolitan Touring isn't just in Ecuador, it's other places as well. But can you, either one of you, give us some insight into what other tours that the company does?
Well, we had one problem over the years, and that is a lot of people have been very happy. We've been producing happy customers for 66 years now. So we heard a lot that people said we wish that we had the same standards in the entire operation, not just Galapagos, what you experience, but from the moment you arrive at the airport and somebody picks you up and make sure that the whole line is flawless, that you get to the hotel. So we wanted to recreate the same standards in Peru. So we started open an office in Peru with an existing company of Peruvians who know Peru like the back of their hands. So that's how we started expanding. So we have an office in Peru, we have an office in Colombia, and of course our headquarters in Ecuador. We're building a hotel in Colombia, in Meta, in Macarena, just like the song, very close to the Caño Cristales. If you Google the prettiest river on earth, that will come out. And not far from there, we're doing a hotel similar to the hotel we already have here in Ecuador.
I just wanted to mention that one of our main programs and that we've grown a lot is the Galapagos and Machu Picchu program, because in 12 days you get to see both countries. And it's a great experience to, you know, go to the Galapagos, do the cruise experience, and then also travel to Peru, go to Lima, Cusco, Machu Picchu, and, you know, it's a beautiful program.
And finally, what's the best way for someone listening now to book a tour with you guys? Go direct or maybe through a travel agent?
I would say it's really the preference of our guests. We are very flexible in booking directly. We work with major companies, tour operators in the US and in the rest of the world. We work with small travel agencies, and we also do direct customers. A lot of people sometimes just want to book directly. We offer that opportunity too, and we do try to be very detailed and customize that experience when they do it directly with us. I would say the benefit of doing it directly is that we're here, so we can talk to operations, we can talk to the ship. You know, it's a different logistics. We live here, we can recommend some other things that we have seen here, so that's the main thing.
There you go. Thank you to Klaus and Sherry-Ann from Metropolitan Touring of explaining how they make traveling the Galapagos Islands sustainable and eco-friendly. We really mean that they made this tour fabulous. And every little detail was thought about. You know, I think it was one of the first days we mentioned to the photographer that we would like some of the footage so we could put it in our video. And he remembered by the last day he came up to us with a CD with the footage on it so we could use it straight away. And just all those little details, I think they really look after their staff and train them well so they can then in turn look after their customers. And it was just absolutely fabulous service.
Now, we've kind of mentioned before the Galapagos Islands. This is what we think is the best way to see the Galapagos Islands on a cruise ship. Yes, you could fly there yourselves and do it. It's still an expensive place to go, doing day tours around all the different islands. But these guys, Metropolitan Touring, are the real deal. If you want a special once-in-a-lifetime trip, especially if you're a nature person, we're not even really massive nature people. We are now, after this trip. So if you're into nature, 100%. Even if you're not, this is a unique, special place to go. And if you want it to be that extra special trip, then the service was just, yeah, amazing. We can't fault it at all. We're going to go to our new scoring system for this series, Mark out of 10. And we always start with culture.
Yeah, so it's in three categories, culture, price, and nature. So for culture, out of 10, Nick, what would you give it?
Yeah, so this is not like a big culture shock like somewhere like India is. I'm sure you'd agree with that.
Yeah.
There is a unique culture there. People live there, own food, music, you know, customs and things like that. But if you want that culture shock, like India, yeah, this is not the place you do go to. So, but there is still a strong, unique culture there. So I'm going to say 7 out of 10 for culture. What do you think?
Yeah, for culture, I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10 because, yeah, there's tons of stuff to do there aside from the nature. You know, how we did the bike ride, we met the local people who are making the moonshine and the coffee and all of that side of things as well. So, yeah, I know what you mean. I think we all know what we're going to give it for nature. but what would you give it out of 10 for price?
So, yeah, even Klaus himself admitted this is not a cheap place to go. Just a bit of information for you guys. We'd like to give you as much info as possible. From Ecuador, our return flights to Galapagos were £400 roughly each.
So that's per person, yeah.
Yeah, so you got to get there first to Ecuador. That's what it cost for us to get there.
Cruises itself, yeah, we work with Metropolitan Touring. We're invited onto the cruise. Of course, it's not a cheap way to see the island, but like I was saying, it's a special, spectacular way to see the island.
And the other thing you need to consider as well is there are fees to get onto the island as well.
Yes.
So you have a fee of $100. A portion of that money goes to preserving the islands and all the national park fees and all of that. And then I believe you have another $10 for something else.
Yeah, I think it's $20 for like your temporary visa thing. Yeah, stamping your passport, a bit of paper at immigration. So yeah, you're right. Once you arrive, $100 plus $20. That's to get into the park and protect the park. So if this was a cheap place, of course, I'd give it 10 out of 10 because what you get back is amazing. But what you get back is so incredible. I'm still going to give this place an 8 out of 10 for price because, yeah, what you see and what you do is amazing.
Yeah, price is a difficult category because, yeah, you think the cheaper it is, the higher the rating. But I don't think it works like that, actually. I think it's more complicated than that. And for what we got, look, you know we've travelled a lot together. And this was the best week of my life. Like,
it really was. It was amazing.
It was just unbelievable. All what we got. I think it's priceless. Like, you can't put a price on it, really. So I would give... Yeah, I'm going to say 8 out of 10 as well. Because it is a lot of money. It's a brilliant thing to do for a honeymoon or a special trip, maybe a special birthday. It's not something that you just go, oh yeah, okay, I'll go Galapagos for my yearly holiday this year. It is something you think about a lot and really invest into. But what we're saying is it is 100% worth it. Third category, nature. Let's just say it. I'm giving it 15.
20.
It, like there's no point even going into it. You've heard the episode by now. For nature, it is the best place to go in the world. Like, entire place. A lot of people say Costa Rica is good for animals and stuff. No, shut up. Like, you need to come here. This is the best place.
Oh, yeah, because we're researching Costa Rica right now, and we read a blog. It says, apparently, it's the best place in the world to see animals. I beg to differ. It's not going to top Galapagos, is it?
It's absolutely not the best place. Galapagos Islands is the best place on Earth.
We're at the end now. A massive thank you to Metropolitan Touring for working with us, making this podcast possible, making the videos that you can watch on our YouTube channel possible. We really enjoyed working with you guys, so thank you so much.
Yeah, and a special thanks to Daniela, who first replied to our message. We are eternally grateful to you for giving us such an incredible experience, and of course to the entire company. But all the work that you do, it has not gone unseen, and we just think you're fabulous. So thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure working with you. So what's next, Nick?
Can Metropolitan Touring take us to Antarctica or somewhere else? That would be good for what's next. But no, what is next on the show? So coming up next, after this episode, our mini episode is an update of our travels. If you remember, towards the start of our trip, we did a special long-term travel episode. A lot has happened since then. We've changed our mind about some things. How's our budget going? We'll be very honest again. But that is coming up on the 15th of the month. And then our next big main episode is Brazil, and in particular, the northeast of Brazil, which is traveled much less than where we went before in Brazil.
Yeah, so it's not your typical Rio and Sao Paulo traveling, which are both great, but we thought we need to see the rest of Brazil because we loved it so much. So yeah, that is our next main episode. Don't forget you can get involved on Patreon and all of our merchandise, or leave us an iTunes review, Spotify review. We'll be very grateful if you did that. That would be amazing. And yeah, we will see you next time for our mini episode.
Bye. Don't forget, you can get in touch with the show. You can email us at whatthefoepodcast@gmail.com. We are also on all the social medias, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And we are also on Patreon. For more information on all those things, you can go to our website at www.whatthefoetravelpodcast.com.